welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, January 25th, 2013. I am your host, Jackie McIntosh, and I'm joined here in studio today by Alyssa Ray.
Hello.
Allison Cole.
Hi there.
And Tim on the controls.
Hi there.
Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyles, and commentary you need to keep you up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy, and it afforded the respect that humans take for granted. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and is also streamed live at coopradio.org, and also available as podcasts and on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. For our feature interview today, we will be speaking with Carol Hine of Saints Rescue and Sanctuary for Senior and Special Needs Animals. Saints is a wonderful end-of-life haven in Mission, BC, for neglected or abandoned animals that need a loving place to call home, where they get the love and care that they need to thrive and be happy. Saints also provides sanctuary for several farm animals that were either found as strays or were otherwise to be off to the slaughterhouse. And for our lifestyle segment today, Alyssa will be chatting with Glenn about the upcoming animal advocacy camp.
Glenn Gates.
All right, and I believe we have a review that Allison's going to do for us for Chloe's Kitchen cookbook.
Yeah, I've been cooking lots. You've been eating my food. So since winning the Food Network's first Cupcake Wars in 2010, I've had my attentive eye on the young and burgeoning vegan chef Chloe Coscarelli, and so is thus a thrill to see her come out with her first cookbook last year entitled Chloe's Kitchen, 125 Easy, Delicious Recipes for Making the Food You Love the Vegan Way. And evidently, the publication of this book has been met with rave reviews other than my own, as Chloe's Kitchen was named Cookbook of the Year by Veg News Magazine. But not only that, it seems that she's been further carving out a name for herself with appearances in various mainstream media outlets, which makes a positive niche for vegan cooking in the mainstream world, which I think can easily accept a glowing young woman who makes the vegan lifestyle look fun, delicious, and most importantly, embraceable. Chloe has been a lifelong vegetarian and vegan for the past 8 years, and with the additional credit of a formal culinary school education, you can have faith that the multitude of amazing looking recipes in this book are going to impress both the taste buds and the visual appeal factor alike. As I always say, it's the reading of the recipes and the photographic accompaniments that spark my gourmand aspirations and thus do the job of propelling me into the act of productivity in the kitchen. And the recipes certainly do read and look enticing and yummy enough to draw a person into the kitchen to recreate these inspired offerings. So this book starts with an endearing introduction that grants you a dose of the author's sparkling personality, and it's followed by a sound, health-focused foreword by Dr. Neil Bernard, president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and a vegan pantry section then ensues. This outlines and explains the various different types of ingredients that you'll find in Chloe's recipes, from capers and tahini to garbanzo flour and tempeh to maple syrup and xanthan gum. In addition, as many cookbooks do these days, she also gives attention to gluten-free and soy-free substitutes in this section of the book, although she does not note which recipes are gluten or soy-free in the actual recipe pages themselves. So now for the food, the beautiful and alluring food. Unlike some vegan cookbooks which circle around low-fat and healthy foods, this one is themed on indulgent and slightly fancy comforting food that will impress your dinner guests, your non-vegan friends and family, your co-workers, and your potluck party attendees. But that's not to say that it's a generally unhealthy book either. The book does feature many recipes that would satisfy anyone watching their calories without sacrificing taste. It's an all-encompassing type of tome when it comes to the variety of recipes featured, and I'm often interested in seeing the mix of recipes that an author has created and chosen to include as a showcasing of their culinary repertoire, especially if it's a first cookbook goes. You know that this one is going to set a precedent for any more work that is set to come. You can see for sure that Chloe's gastronomic range is varied and well-learned, and she's no stranger to coming up with appealing flavor profiles that any food lover will appreciate. And so I had previously just thought that Chloe was just solely a dessert person, but that's not true at all. The recipe sections are divided into categories named small bites, soups and salads, simply vegetables, eat with your hands, oodles of noodles, the main event, and cupcakes and more. We have phyllo mushroom turnovers, mandarin peanut crunch salad with crisp crispy wontons, miso glazed eggplant, seitan scallopini, and chocolate molten lava cakes with raspberry sauce. Drooling yet, anyone? I have made 9 of the 125 recipes so far and have shared several of them with my Animal Voices co-hosts here, so I'd like to talk about them now. So I brought lunch a few weeks ago and made the tomato basil bisque with pumpernickel croutons, the minted couscous with arugula, butternut squash, and currants, and Chloe's award-winning ginger nutmeg spice cupcakes, which are the famous cupcakes that garnered her first place in the Cupcake Wars. And then last week and this week too, I brought the samosas with the cilantro tamarind dipping sauce. So you had more samosas today. What did you think of them?
They were kind of cold, but
they're straight out of the fridge. You're lucky you got any. They were from
Thank
last
you so
week.
Much. I actually didn't eat breakfast, but yeah, no, they were really great. I think they'd be great to bring to a potluck or something like that.
Even
super cute.
1 week old, they were still really good.
Yeah. Right. So even just left in, you know, those were the extras. I couldn't even eat any. I don't do deep fried, but deep fried is really good though. You have to admit. Mm. It had that cilantro tamarind dipping sauce with it that you guys didn't get today, but last week, Jackie, you
said really good. Yeah,
really liked that. It was like really nice and sweet.
Very sweet, but it was good.
Yeah, it was really good. So not that healthy, but this is an example of a really good appetizer that you could bring to a party and people would really love it. Tomato basil bisque with pumpernickel croutons. That was one of my favorite dishes. I loved it so much that I made it twice, actually, and I know you guys liked it too.
Yeah, that was
delicious.
Lovely.
Yeah.
That's it? Okay, well, I will talk about that a little bit. You know, the recipe is really simple, but it is also unique because it called for roasting all the vegetables first, which really brought out their delicious natural flavors while cooking. I've never made a tomato soup before where you actually roast the veggies before. So you're roasting the tomatoes and the onions and the garlic. Then you whiz them all up in the Vitamix, if you have one, which I'm blessed to have now, and it made it so smooth. And then I really love the pumpernickel crouton addition to the bisque. The recipe calls for making your own croutons with pumpernickel bread. I've never actually made croutons before. It's super easy. And then you place them on top of the soup prior to eating, and I think it just really makes them that much more special. The minted couscous with arugula, butternut squash, and currants. I made some substitutions for you guys. I couldn't find the Israeli pearl couscous that was needed, so I substituted with, I kind of looked it up and saw what it was, and I thought, hey, I have pearl barley, I'll just use that instead. And then instead of currants, I had raisins, I used those instead. What did you think of that dish?
I thought that would be a good potluck dish as well. I think a lot of these are really, they're meant to be shared. I'd say, like, probably my favorite thing that you made was definitely the bisque. I would say that was probably the most memorable.
Mm-hmm. I loved the salad. I thought it was just, I love the mint, and I totally thought the squash
profile
was mango. It was so sweet.
Oh, right. That's what you were saying.
Yeah. It was really really summery.
So the butternut squash was actually roasted, and so of course that brings out the natural sugars, right? I really liked that the flavors, the combination of flavors. You had the chopped mint, the sweet currants of the raisins, the spicy arugula, and the squash, and it just really all went together. And as you noted before, Alyssa, it was just like a really sort of like subtle, simple. No, not too spicy, not too flavorful in any way, but sort of a combination of really subtle flavors that all really worked well together. So that's what I mean when I say she really knows how to combine all these flavors together to make food that's really good. And then finally, we had the award-winning ginger nutmeg spice cupcakes. I had to try these out to see what all the fuss was about because I just wanted to know what were the cupcakes like that won the very first Cupcake Wars competition. What did you guys think about those?
I didn't see the fuss, but I'm also not a cupcake person.
But you know what? I thought they were good, but I'm like, wow, these are first place. The other ones, like, and the Cupcake Wars, they were like, I can't believe vegan cupcakes won. Well, of course, vegan cupcakes can be good. I really liked it. I really liked the date caramel component of the cupcakes, which is drizzled over the buttercream frosting, and you just simply make that by boiling medjool dates and mixing it up with some water and maple syrup, and I thought that was just a really, really great little addition there. Well, to conclude, I'd certainly call Chloe's Kitchen one of my all-time favorite cookbooks. It's fun, creative, and colorful, and that's what I like in a cookbook, something that's going to make you drool all over the food porn side, but that actually presents very doable, tasty, and satisfying recipes as well. I do look forward to exploring this book some more, as well as to checking out her new book that is coming out really soon. It's called Chloe's Vegan Desserts. If you want to see more of Chloe and her recipes on the web, I encourage you to visit her website at chefchloe.com.
Great. Thanks for that, Allison. So last weekend, I was lucky enough to go to a wonderful dinner hosted by Tim and Alyssa. It's a Plate Invaders event, which is a supper club. And I was just wondering if we could chat a little bit about that.
Sure.
So I guess I was wondering, like, how did you guys start Plate Invaders?
I could answer that one, okay. Actually, just because I think we had mentioned before on the show that secret suppers, they've been going for a while, like where you kind of have events at someone's house. And my old roommate, Chef Merida Anderson of Vegan Secret Supper, or VSS, started the first Vegan Secret Supper in my house. And I'm still in that same house. And when Tim sort of moved in and we just... And you know, he has dreams of being a chef and such. I was like, well, that kind of seems like a natural fit. And Merida.
So was your idea?
Well, it was Merida's idea, and right. I just said this space to Tim is kind of for
it's a
that.
Cool house, yeah.
And yeah, it was just totally natural, and I love that. Merida passed on her table and chairs to us, and she's actually coming out with a cookbook soon, which is exciting. Published by Arsenal Pulp Press, so we'll hopefully chat with her on the show about that at some point. But yeah, that's where the idea came from.
Cool. And Tim, I know like a lot of the people at the event were what you would call meat eaters.
How surprising. How did you get them there? Are they people you know, or
It's people that I know, but it's also then they tell their friends, and this is really what I'm aiming at, because I find like I started it, or I had the desire to start it. At least I had this idea or like the room, and I thought that's great. I need to move in so that I can make use of the room. And I found when I started last year, there were not yet any high upscale vegan or vegetarian places in Vancouver. And I thought that was really missing, because I find in generally the Vancouver vegan scene restaurant wise is very much directed towards health food, which is good in itself. But it also, I find, gives vegan food a bit of a bad rap, in the sense that it's all like gritty and kind of grainy and low fat.
Not to say that it's not delicious.
No, but I think when people think about vegan food, they think about a very specific kind of food. And I just want to show that other food is possible. And for me, it's really not vegan food as such. I don't want to put this label on it, but it's food that happens to be vegan.
That is really good.
Exactly. That's really good, so that everybody can come, whether they're vegan or not. And this is what I'm aiming at, that I want non-vegans to come and see, wow, vegan food is really, really good. And that they kind of see that it's not the special food these weird people eat. But
yeah. But you wouldn't say it's unhealthy food either, would you? I think it's like Chloe's book. It's like it's just really delicious food. And, oh, it's vegetables, so, it's probably
exactly,
pretty healthy.
Exactly. It's not that I'm, like, aiming at unhealthy. And I'm also typical comfort food. I kind of avoid that as well. But, for example, I don't use that much of meat substitutes. Or, like, sometimes I'd use, like, a bit of tofu or tempeh or something. But usually I avoid it. Just because I want to show there are other options there, and you don't need.
One thing I think has been really interesting is that you learned about cooking and through vegetarian cooking, like pretty heavy in dairy and stuff, and this has been an experiment for you as well.
Yeah, that's
with
true.
Vegan cooking and taking it to the next level, and it involves like a lot of kind of research and seeing things differently, and that's been really exciting to see.
It's a challenge, but I really like it. I have been vegetarian most of my life, and already a couple of years ago I got this book, I think Famous Chefs Cook Vegan or Good Chefs Cook Vegan. It's
I've
a really famous
book.
It's very fancy. It's like all the recipes are very difficult to recreate at home. It's all like Michelin star cooking. But I draw a lot of inspiration from this book, or drew back then. And now when I started getting more involved into vegan cooking, yeah, I really find it interesting to see how can I like veganize these recipes that I know.
Great.
All right, great.
We look forward to more future Plate Invaders events, definitely. Tim.
Yeah, for sure.
Roots Reggae, heard every Friday night from midnight till 7 a.m. This is where we spread a little one love message, reminding you to lift as you climb. Don't leave anyone behind. So get on board the reggae train and let's take it to a higher level. Roots Reggae, filled with substance, yet substance free. Check us out online at www.cooperadio.org. Tell your neighbors, tell your family and friends, it's commercial free and full of vibes. There's a message in the music, and the music is the message. Roots Reggae, every Friday night from midnight till daylight.
All right, so it's a busy time of the year for animal rights vegan events. So tonight, I forgot to tell you guys what you're listening to. So you're listening to Vancouver Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And as I was saying, it's a busy time of year for vegan and animal rights events. So tonight, actually, 3G Vegetarian Restaurant is hosting a fundraiser to benefit Liberation BC. There'll be a dinner between 4:30 and 9. At 3G Vegetarian Restaurant will be donating 30% of all dinner proceeds over $15 to Liberation BC. Another opportunity to eat some great food is Pig Out by donation at Carmivore. So 100% of profits go to Hearts on Noses Pink Sanctuary in Mission, which I actually also visited last week. And that's on February 1 and 2 from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. for the launch of their new later hours at Carmivore.
Wow, 100% of proceeds from all their food sales?
Exactly, and all the staff is just volunteering their time for this event. So
wow.
Very dedicated people there, and everyone should go, I think. And another very exciting event that's very close to Animal Voices is a film screening that Animal Voices and Drishti Point are actually collaborating.
And Drishti Point is the yoga show on Co-op Radio. They're on Tuesdays 5 to 6. And they actually approached Animal Voices because they also have a non-violent kind of mandate. Mm-hmm. And they all their speakers, like, sort of they say they only can promote compassion and they don't want people talking about, you know, the benefits of eating animals or animal products. So they said, hey, let's do something together and tell us more about that event.
Yes. So this this is promising to be an enlightening, heart-opening experience. The event is called Expand Your Love, which is very fitting. And we will be screening the beautiful movie entitled Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home. This is a free event, and there will be love-themed giveaways. And this is on February 14th from 7 to 9 p.m. At SFU Harbor Center, 515 West Hastings, downtown Vancouver. And that's
Curious about, sorry, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just, okay, just the details. Yeah. And it's in the Labatt Hall, which is room 1700.
I was just curious about the love-themed giveaway. Do I get a man if I go there?
You may.
To love?
Well, we're actually talking about that. We're not totally 100% sure about the giveaways because Tribe of Heart, the producers of the documentary, are very specific about what they want these events to be about. And they want, like, no corporate sponsorship, no money exchange. They just want it to be about the film, which is Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home, which is the 2009 documentary they produced. Amazing film. And so we're thinking about how to do giveaways. We want people to leave, you know, feeling good, but yeah, it's not quite sure how yet.
So if we can't give giveaways around, you may just find that special someone, and that can be the giveaway.
That could be a giveaway, exactly.
All right. So for our feature interview today, we will have Carol Hines of Saints Animal Rescue on the show to speak about this wonderful organization and the animals that have arrived at Saints in their time of need. Oh, just waiting. All right. Hello, Carol, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi.
Hi. Now, I was fortunate enough to visit Saints last weekend and always get such joy out of visiting these animals and to see that they're so well adjusted and content in their environment despite their own physical or unique challenges. It's just beautiful to see. And I just wanted to start by asking you how Saints came to be, where it all started, and how it has grown into the place it is today.
Well, it started about 8 years ago. I was actually running a cat shelter in Maple Ridge, and I was taking home seniors and special needs cats and dogs into my home. And that's when I realized how great the need was for these animals. There just didn't seem a place for them to be able to go to. So I actually turned the cat shelter I was running over to the board of directors, and I purchased property out in Mission, and we set it up specifically for seniors and special needs animals of any species. So we have cats, dogs, horses, cows, pigs, goats, llamas, chickens, ducks. We have just about every domestic species that there is.
It's amazing there. It's very overwhelming when you see all the animals there, but it's, you can't leave that place without feeling like a full heart. You have a heart.
I heard that there's 120 animals there approximately. Is that right?
Yeah, our numbers range from about 120 to about 140 at any given time.
Wow.
Most of our animals are, in fact, now SPCA cruelty seizures, and that includes the farm animals as well. But we have a lot of animals. We have paid staff to care for them during the week, and then we have an army of about 35 volunteers who volunteer their time on the weekends to care for them.
That's great. So it's obvious that you have a lot of love and compassion for all the animals that end up at Saints, but did you always feel so connected to animals? Can you tell us about a particular animal or moment in your life that helped you first build or increase this attachment to animals?
Well, our very first dog that I remember as a child was my grandmother's dog, and when she passed away, he came to live with us. I was probably 7 or 8 at the time, and he was a senior dog who had epilepsy. So right from the very start, I was used to senior dogs that had problems, and it just grew from there. Like, I have always been so connected emotionally and physically with animals, and it just grew from there.
Great. And what are your most common experiences or reasons that you deal with for people abandoning their animal friends? And are there any suggestions or advice you can give to our listeners who may be experiencing similar struggles with their own senior companion animals?
I think for the companion animals, like the dogs and cats, probably the number one issue is incontinence. Okay. Because as bodies age, you know, the systems and the structures inside the body age, and they're more likely to become incontinent. And that's really difficult for your average family to try to deal with. We have these issues about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing happens to humans as we age, because I also work as a nurse. But there are ways to manage it, you know, changing your flooring from things like carpet to lino, using leather and vinyl types of furniture so that they're easy to clean, they're easy to wash, those kinds of things.
Okay. And can you tell me a bit about some other stories maybe that stood out in your mind about particular animals being abandoned?
Well, the ones that we get that are in the saddest shape are always the SPC cruelty seizures. They're not always due to abuse. A lot of times they're just due to profound neglect, and it could be because they lived with a senior citizen who absolutely loved them, but their own health issues and their own disabilities were such that they couldn't care for them properly. Mm. A lot of times these animals, the senior citizen goes into a care facility or passes away, the animals end up with a family member who doesn't really want them and is not prepared for them, and certainly all their special needs that they have. And so things kind of go from bad to worse for them, and they're finally taken to the shelters. They're in terrible shape. And a lot of it is society's attitude towards aging animals.
Yeah.
You know, just because they're getting old and just because they're getting sick doesn't mean you turn a blind eye to the problems that they're having. They still need to see the vet. They still need to be groomed. They still need to be cared for properly. And they need the support put in place so that they can have that quality of life.
Absolutely. So for anyone that visits Saints, like I said, it
has to be impossible to not be affected by the spirit of the animals there, as they all have such unique personalities and behaviors. But mm-hmm. I have to say, like, I became quite fond of all the farm animals, especially Emily, as I was telling you earlier, your beautiful Holstein cow. She was extremely sweet and kept sneaking up behind us, not wanting us to wander too far away from her. She definitely loved all the affection I was giving her and is such a kind and trusting nature. Can you tell us a bit about where Emily came from and her story of how she ended up at Saints?
Emily was a bit of an accident. We actually had a Jersey cow by the name of Percy that we had taken in as a young calf. Mm-hmm. And he was actually, when he was about 6 months old, he became quite dangerous because he didn't know he was a cow. He thought he was a person or a dog, and he kept trying to play with us. And when I asked the vets, what do I do about this, you know, they said, well, put him on a truck, which wasn't going to happen. So what we did is we found him a senior cow, and she became his mother, and she taught him how to be a cow. Problem was, she died, and when she died, he was devastated. So we found him another 21-year-old cow who was coming out of a dairy farm, and she took over being his friend for about a year, and then she died. And Percy grieved so deeply from the loss of this cow that we, in our wisdom, decided to go to the auction, find a cow that was going for meat, and purchase her and save her life, but one that was younger that could live with him and not die on him. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, Percy died this year, which is really sad. But while we were at the auction, we found Joy, and we decided that we were going to get her. There were 2-day-old calves that still had their umbilical cords attached. One was Emily, one was Todd. Nobody would even bid on them. The bidding went down to $2. Nobody bid. They got thrown over into the kill pile. And, you know, we're soft-hearted rescue people. we just couldn't tolerate that. So we scooped them both up and we brought them home. Todd died within the first week. The bull calves are never given the colostrum from the mom for that first feeding, and so he just didn't have the antibodies. Emily did get that first feeding, but because she's a free Martin, which meant she was sterile, she was no good to the farmer for use for a dairy cow, so that's why she ended up in auction. So she came to us. She was probably 2 or 3 days old when she came to us. We hand-raised her. Percy and Joy became her parents. They were just like the happiest, most dedicated, loving cow family. Aww. And when Percy died, not only did Joy and Emily grieve deeply, but Emily took over Percy's role as the greeter and the welcomer and the barnyard ambassador. And it's been really interesting watching her step into the role that he held for so long.
Yeah, I could tell she was very friendly. And you said you got her from the auction for $2? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Wow. That's definitely...
The whole thing was sad. It was just sad. I'm never going to the auction again. It just broke my heart.
It's a extreme case of an undervalued animal.
So
I know Saints originated with mainly senior cats, dogs, and rabbits, but when and why did you decide to branch into providing a safe haven for farm animals in need?
Oh, again, it was an accident. Okay. Gideon, our old 37-year-old horse, showed up one day, so there came our first horse. Then a couple of ducks and chickens that were running around the streets of Vancouver that Animal Control had picked up, they ended up coming here. We got into the pigs because Animal Control called us about a pig by the name of Wilbur that was running loose. So hence now we were doing pigs. And the sheep came because the owner had had just recently died of ovarian cancer, and we were asked to take her 2 senior dogs. And when we went to pick up the dogs, they asked us if we could take the sheep too. So all of them were, we never really intended to do this. But each animal came, maybe because they were meant to, I don't know. But each time they came, we just kind of broadened our knowledge, and we broadened our resources, and we learned how to care for them properly.
Okay, great. And you also mentioned, like, when you go to an auction to pick up an animal, you always have a hard time bringing home just one of them, and usually end up with a few more than intended, as I completely understand I would be the exact same way. Do you feel there is a need for more farm animal sanctuaries in Western Canada to help more of these undervalued animals from ending up at the slaughterhouse? And what are some steps that you can recommend or advice that you can give an individual or group of individuals to help make this a reality, to help open up a sanctuary?
Well, I think, first of all, people need to be aware of where their food and their meat is coming from. We're at the cusp of a point where, as a society, we are starting to look at the issues surrounding how our farm animals are farmed. And we're looking at wanting, if we're going to eat meat, if we're going to use animal products, we certainly do not want those animals to live lives that are tortured or abused or unhappy or any of those kinds of things. So we're reaching the point where, as a society, we're looking at those issues surrounding quality of life for farm animals. Mm-hmm. So I think the first step that we have to make is make a commitment to trying to purchase items that are from humanely farmed animals, or choosing not to eat as much meat as we do, or lobbying our government to please, you know, increase the laws that surround the daily care of farm animals. Europe is way ahead of us in how their
Absolutely.
Animals are allowed to be treated, those kinds of things. So that's the first step, is to make a conscious decision that we do want to see some changes. And then I think if there's a group of people that are interested in starting a farm sanctuary, you got to get all your ducks in a row. You need to educate yourself about what the issues are, what the problems are. You need to understand what your limitations are, what kind of resources you can expect, and you have to have a very firm goal of what you want to accomplish. You know, for us, because it was accidental, we've kind of grown into this, we have a small farm sanctuary, but we're not a big enough farm sanctuary to make any kind of huge difference in anything. Mm-hmm. We don't have the space. We don't have the land, you know, those kinds of things. So all of those things have to be in place if you want to have an effective farm sanctuary, like some of the bigger ones that they have down in the States.
Yeah, we definitely need some of those here, I would agree.
Yeah.
So do you think Mission is an ideal place to open up a sanctuary in Western Canada, or are there better locations you can think of?
I don't know that one location is better than another. I think it depends on the communities that you're in and how welcoming they are. Okay. Mission has been incredibly welcoming to us. They've embraced us, they value us, those kinds of things. So, you know, for us, it's a great place for us to set down our roots and call home. You know, are the prairies maybe better suited to something like a cow sanctuary? Maybe the weather's warmer, they have the larger grazing lands, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's so much, as long as the land is appropriate for what you're using and you're meeting
zoning
the bylaws,
issues, right?
Yeah, and all those mm-hmm. kinds of things. Now, I don't think it really matters where you are. You do want to be fairly close to a major center, because if you're not, people can't come visit you.
Yeah, I understand.
And people need to be able to come and visit you in order to see what you're doing and support what you're doing.
Yeah, that's so true. And finally, as Saints also adopts out many of their animals for someone looking to add a companion animal to their life, mm-hmm. what would you have to say are some of the major benefits of adding a senior friend to your home rather than a puppy or a kitten?
Well, there's no doubt that taking on senior animals is a major commitment. You know, their health care needs are going to be greater, and their health care needs are going to increase as they age. Mm-hmm. But these animals have lived... they've survived their whole entire lives, some of them from some pretty horrible backgrounds and things. Some of them have some really significant disabilities. But I'll tell you, they find joy in every single day. Aww. If they're treated well, if they're loved, if they're given an appropriate place to live, if they're given appropriate care. And at the end of the day, they bring such a gift into our lives, even if we've only had them for 6 months or 3 months or whatever, you know, to see them blossom, to see the joy that they've had in that time, you can't buy that. That's just a huge Aww. Gift.
Wonderful.
That's a beautiful thing.
And can you tell us a bit about how people can help Saints out?
Well, it's certainly any kind of financial donations are always appreciated. We are a registered charity, so we do give tax receipts. Things of donation value to us are cleaning supplies, bleach, paper towels, garbage bags, food for the animals, that kind of thing. Volunteering is huge. The only reason we can do what we're doing as well as we do is because we have the most incredible volunteers in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so those are the main things.
Okay, wonderful. And thank you so much for joining us today, Carol.
Thank you.
To tell us about Saints and the wonderful animals that call it home.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
To find out more about Saints or make a donation or volunteer, go to saintsrescue.ca.
Sounds like we should do a field trip there.
I think so.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking. We are all on the same wavelength here. Yeah. You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And I've got some news for you. So this is a local story that comes from Vancouver. A Vancouver man charged last year over allegations he used a cell phone to videotape himself torturing a kitten. Now faces more charges. Jordan Lucas has been charged with two more counts of animal cruelty after another 36 videos of five cats and a mouse being tortured were uncovered. The tapes were turned over to the BC SPCA by a member of the public who stumbled upon them. So I hadn't heard about this story before. Jackie, you said you're a bit familiar with this story. Is that right?
I vaguely heard about it. I think this was quite a while ago, but I remember hearing about it. I don't know all the details.
You don't know the details.
No.
Yeah, so apparently the videos have been called extremely disturbing and involve sickening abuse, so it's really quite disgusting. Lucas will appear in court on February 4th to face the additional charges. A Canadian story, broken needles found in pork at Manitoba packing plant. So the Manitoba Pork Council is warning hog producers to be more careful with their animals after needle fragments were recently found in pork at a packing plant. And it was said that in the last month, broken needle fragments have been found twice in pork products at processing plants in Manitoba. The Manitoba Pork Council has stated that fortunately the fragments were found before the meat entered the marketplace. And apparently it's not common to find broken needles in pork at packing plants twice in 1 month. But what are these needles even used for, do you wonder? Well, they're used to administer injections to pigs. I imagine it's for all the antibiotics that they're giving them. And I guess it's pretty easy for them to break in the pigs and just to get lost in there, right? So if the needles break, producers are urged to, of course, remove the resulting fragments from the pig before the pork goes to processing. That's what the news story says, but wouldn't you think that would be kind of obvious?
And the common sense, one would think, but I don't think there's much in that industry.
Well, get this. Apparently, the Pork Council is saying it only takes one broken needle to reach the public to destroy our industry's reputation. So I kind of want these needles to be found in the pigs. What do you think? Anything to add to that? Are you hoping that more needles?
Well, any story that comes out about, you know, gross things like that chicken liver that was found in KFC, you know, that kind of stuff, it gets people thinking about how gross it really is.
It's actually an animal that you're eating. It's not just
this processed, man-made product that comes nicely wrapped in styrofoam and plastic wrapping. There was actually a process to getting it there, and that involved injecting this animal with enough medication so that you won't get sick. Actually, that sort of backfires on people, though, because when people eat all the antibiotics,
antibiotic resistance.
Exactly, and that's becoming a major, major issue. So another story, this is international. It has to do with emus. So where do emus come from?
Australia?
From their mothers?
Well, Australia was the answer I was looking for. Apparently, they live in India as well. So this story really caught my eye. Tens of thousands of Australia's iconic bird, the emu, have been abandoned in India. Many left to starve to death after the collapse of emu farms. And so apparently there's an estimate that 75,000 emus have been abandoned in the southern province of Tamil Nadu, and that 10,000 died of starvation. There were about 200 emu farms in Tamil Nadu, 1,000 throughout India, and up to 550,000 emus in the country. And apparently emu farming, you might wonder, why are there emus in Australia? It's because they've been marketed to make meat, to bring meat to India. Indians do eat meat, and it's been promoted as farming, as a farming trade. And Australia does not trade emus for farming, but other countries trade between themselves, or they use zoo stock to breed birds for farming. So that's a lot of really disgusting stuff that's happening. Yeah. And they make emu biryani as a main course at social events like marriages and birthdays. And now that they've been abandoned, there's all these emus that are dying. Nice. So that's all I have for this week's news.
All right. Oh. Well, thanks for that. That's exciting stuff going on. And thanks for keeping your ear to the ground. Now we have joining us on the phone a local animal activist and community organizer, Glenn Gates. He's going to shine a spotlight on the Animal Advocacy Camp 2013, which is happening in Vancouver on Saturday, February 23rd and Sunday, February 24th in Vancouver. Thank you so much for joining us today, Glenn.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, as always. So you are the key organizer of this event, the third Animal Advocacy Camp. The first one was in 2010. I consider it to be pretty much the most important animal action event in BC, I'd say.
Definitely.
Maybe Western Canada. I don't know what else is going on in Alberta and Saskatchewan, but I know it takes a lot of work to pull it all together, and all of us here would just like to thank you for all the hard work you put in to
make
it all happen.
Oh, no problem. It's my pleasure, really.
Good. Yeah, it's pretty much like the event that you like put most of your energy into in the year, would you say?
Yeah, I think so now. It's it really is the only animal rights conference in Canada.
Yeah, I guess. I kind of like sort of assumed that something would happen in Toronto, but it's just not there yet, is it?
Yeah, Toronto has the big veg fest, but
right.
But they don't have
a conference.
Yep. So it definitely needed to happen. You saw a hole there, and let's tell us about sort of the mission and the idea behind Animal Advocacy Camp.
Well, it really was that there isn't a Canadian animal rights conference. You know, we Fur Bearers puts on a fur-oriented conference, but there really wasn't a conference for activists, and especially a grassroots activist conference. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that it's oriented towards local activists who are working at a grassroots level, many people working on their own, and it's a way for everybody to kind of come together and share and learn from each other and, you know, develop new campaigns, come up with new ideas.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. I'm so glad it's in Vancouver and that it's an annual event. It's so important. So let's talk about, it is a bit different than the other animal conferences, I think, out there. Tell us about the unconference format and what that means and kind of the principles behind that.
Yeah. So I've been to a few conferences in my life. And normally, the ordinary format for a conference is you go and you sit in the audience and you listen to, you know, 50 speakers throughout the weekend tell you things. So an unconference is a little different. While we do have an opening and closing speaker each day, the rest of the event is put together by the people at the conference. So there aren't preset speakers. Anyone who has an idea and is willing to lead a discussion on that idea can propose a breakout session. So instead of it being the director of some big nationwide organization, it can be you talking about an idea for a campaign or an idea for a new group or, you know, whatever your idea is. And if people are willing to listen to you, then you've got your conference. So it's really much more exciting and fun for attendees.
It's very interactive. That's what I like about it. You're right. It's not just sitting. I've been to lots of just the traditional animal rights conferences. It's not just sitting there, and which some people might like, but I really like the interactivity of it and getting your voice out there and making connections. It's a way better way to make connections with people rather than just sitting in a lecture room.
Yep. And it is for people who are new to the idea or uncomfortable leading the discussion, you can treat it like a regular conference. You just don't know in advance who the speakers are going to be. But you can go and you can just sit and you can listen to people. You don't have to talk. You don't have to present a session. So for people who are shy or who just like the old-fashioned conference format, it can be that for you. It's kind of whatever you want it to be.
That's really good to hear. I myself, with the first conference in 2010, I wasn't quite as connected to the community as I am now, and I was excited about the idea, but yeah, super nervous and just shy and just didn't know many people and kind of thought that I would be forced into interacting, and I didn't quite want to. But then, yeah, I went last year and I saw that, yeah, you could totally not say a word the whole time. No one would notice. No one would care.
My sister needs to hear this interview.
You could just take it in if you wanted.
I can get her to come and not say anything.
Yeah, totally. It's very comfortable. I much appreciate that. So I just kind of wanted to, I know with probably with people presenting sessions, because it is up to the people, probably there's a lot of people who don't have experience facilitating groups. Do you have any advice for people about facilitating groups or how to make the most of the short time there? Because it's easy to kind of get off track, or, you know, someone kind of steals the spotlight for a while, or just like, what's the key tips on facilitating a successful session?
Yeah, well, the breakout sessions, when people decide to have one, they kind of fall under two categories. One is just simply a presentation. That's fairly straightforward. If you're an expert in something and you feel like you want to share your expertise, you just get up and you can tell people about it for 45 minutes. The other way to do it is to lead a discussion. If you have a question or you really want involvement with people, you lead a discussion. And those kind of groups, if you're facilitating it, if you're leading it, you really want to make sure that you try to give everyone a fair chance to speak. You be conscious that no one is hijacking the discussion. And it's really okay to keep the topic on your topic, because people are there to talk about your topic, and you don't want to let someone else hijack it into a discussion about something else unrelated or tangentially related that isn't about what you wanted to talk about. Really, you do own it.
I think at the beginning of the conference, we'll be laying down some guidelines, right? That, like, just as you've said, of sort of what the expectations are and what you can and can't do. Is that correct, Glenn?
Yeah, we will.
Okay.
There will be some talk about it, respecting everybody's point of view, trying not to get into personal arguments. But really the key to the facilitation, I see, is trying to be fair to everyone who's there.
And I've been to a couple just conferences or workshops in the last little while, and I really like that the people, the facilitators, are like, oh, that's a good point, I'll talk to you about that later, or like, you know, like, let's chat after this is over, just to try to keep it on point. So sometimes you have to be a little bit tough, and yeah, I just kind of asked that question because I really hope we get the most out of our time, and I know it's tough to keep things on point, but yeah.
It is true that some facilitators will be complete amateur at it, you know, the first time that they've ever led a discussion.
Yeah.
And it's, I'd like to say that it is, if everyone can take a little bit of role in watching yourself and helping the facilitators to do a better job.
Yeah, it definitely.
It'll all be better.
Yeah, we all have a responsibility there. Like, because we're not just, we're participants. So we all have to be, it takes an extra sense of awareness and consciousness of what's going on. And that's really exciting. Let's talk now about the keynote speakers. You do have a few people you're bringing in to share their wisdom, sort of more big names in the animal advocacy movement in Canada. Tell us a little bit about those folks.
Right, yeah. Well, we've got Twyla Francois, who is currently the Director of Investigations for Mercy for Animals Canada. And probably all of your listeners know that Mercy for Animals has a sister organization here in Canada. Mm-hmm. It's independent but related to Mercy for Animals. And she's their director of investigation. So the recent investigation that they ran, she is in charge of training and developing those investigations. She's amazing. She's done work with Canadians for Ethical treatment of food animals, horse investigations. She's done foie gras investigations. She's done all sorts of investigations all across Canada. She's probably Canada's expert in investigations.
That's exciting. Yeah, I can't wait to hear her.
We've had her on the show before, too. If people are interested in hearing Twyla speak on the air, just search her name on animalvoices.org.
Yeah, definitely. And who is the other key speaker?
And we've got Liz Marshall, who your listeners may not know. She is the director of an upcoming film called The Ghosts in Our Machine. The primary subject of the film is Joanne MacArthur, who is a photographer. Who takes, if you've seen beautiful pictures of animals at a sanctuary or animals on a factory farm, she probably took those photos. She's an amazing photographer, but Liz Marshall's making a film about her work and about the animals, the ghosts in our machine being the animals who are hidden from view, all of the animals that are in factory farms that no one sees, all the ghosts. Not only is it a film, it's an amazing website. Just kind of a wonderful project that's been going on for a couple of years, and the film will be out later this year, so she's going to be quite fun to hear.
Excellent. Yeah, I can't I hope to have her on the show. Actually, we had Joanne MacArthur on the show last year, and people can look that up on animalvoices.org to hear about her work. But yeah, I'd love to hear about actually making the film. I am so excited about that film. It just looks so beautiful.
Me too. I'm super excited about that.
Yeah.
We have one more speaker who I've just added.
Oh, good.
Oh, tell us.
Dr. Olivier Baraville, who is currently scientific advisor to Canadian Thoracical Treatment of Food Animals. But he's also done work in horse rescue. But he's going to likely talk about science aspects of animal advocacy.
Interesting.
So he'll be really fascinating. He's also doing a talk the next day on the Monday at UBC in coordination with Stop UBC Animal Research.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll look more into that, and that's really great that you have. Yeah, those three speakers sound like they cover quite a wide range of aspects, and yeah, I'm excited. So let's just we don't have much time here, but let's talk about how people can learn more about Animal Advocacy Camp and register.
And you still need volunteers too?
We do need volunteers, and they can email Becky at liberationbc.org, and that's BECCI at liberationbc.org. If people would like to register, registration is $30 for the weekend, $20 a day. The event is at UBC. The registration website is animaladvocacycamp.ca.
And it's
pretty easy to remember.
Yeah. Hard to forget. And how much is it, remind us?
It's $30 for the weekend.
Not bad at all. And it's out at UBC this year.
Yeah, it's in the
right next to the bus building. Loop, so really easy to get to or walk to if you're me.
Good.
Yeah, it's really convenient.
Perfect. Just the last question I kind of want to ask is, it's two full days packed with networking and information where our brains are just going to be throbbing. What are your hopes for what will come out of the event and carry forward into the next year and beyond?
Of course, I always want there to be, 100 new campaigns that come out of it and lots of projects. But really, primarily, I want to strengthen Vancouver's animal rights community so that people work more effectively and work more effectively together. I know that there have always been at least one or two campaigns that have come out of it, people organizing events because of it, people connecting because of it, and then going on to form an organization or something like that. So there is a lot of practical outcome to it. And we also we post all of the notes from the weekend and any videos that are taken on the website so that people can look at it afterwards, and even the people who can't make it can still learn from it and look back.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say too, as a new initiative this year, we've started a Facebook group which can connect people to keep connected after the conference. So it's Vancouver Animal Advocacy Camp. You can just join the group there, and that's a great way for us to sort of all keep in contact afterwards.
Yeah, can I also quickly run through the thank you to the sponsors?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, Animal Voices has kindly been a sponsor. Nice Shoes is one of the major sponsors. Stop UBC Animal Research. Laura Lee Shaw is a sponsor. And Fur Bearer Defenders and Earth Save Canada are also sponsors of the event. So we've got a wonderful slew of sponsors that represent a nice range of animal activism in Vancouver and Canada, actually.
Excellent. Well, great. I just wanted to thank you again for joining us today to talk about this year's Animal Advocacy Camp, February 23rd and 24th in Vancouver. We at Animal Voices will definitely be there. And again, that's animaladvocacycamp.ca. And we look forward to seeing everyone there.
Thanks, Glenn. So much for having me.
You're welcome. So I guess that wraps up our show. You are, of course, listening to 100.5 FM, CFRO, Vancouver's co-op radio, the people-powered station, broadcasting in Vancouver on unceded Coast Salish territories. And yeah, I just wanted to actually quickly mention a couple events coming up today. It's Friday, January 25th, if you're listening live. The Vancouver Animal Defense League has a couple actions this evening. First, at Hills in Carisdale, which is a store which sells Canada Goose brand products, which have fur trim on them from very, very unhappy creatures. Previously living creatures. And so, yeah, so Animal Defense League is going to be up there 5 to 6 p.m. today in Carisdale outside of the Hills store. And then they're heading to Fortune Garden Restaurant to protest the shark fin soup that they still sell there. That's at 1475 West Broadway in Kits, 6:30 to 8:30. You can Google Vancouver Animal Defense League probably for more information. Thanks to Marley Jean for organizing those awesome events. And our website, if you want to learn more about what was on today's show or check out past shows or learn about our social networking, how to stay in touch with us, it's all at animalvoices.org. That's where you'll find videos and blogs. And yeah, please do keep in touch and contact us if you have feedback for us. We are totally open to that, to any kind of feedback you have or suggestions. On next week's Animal Voices show, Allison's going to be featuring an interview with Adam Roberts, the Executive Vice President of Born Free USA, to talk about the ivory trade and elephant protection. And let's see, stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith after the show. And I'm going to leave you with a song called Aminals by Baths. One of my favorite animal songs. It's kind of, you know, a childhood view, a very innocent view of connection with animals. And I always just thought it was so beautiful. So yeah, thank you so much for listening today. And remember to be kind to animals.